Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and our spoken words. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarb. I'm your host for the hour with engineer Mike Murphy. And neighbor Mike Metz is here as the keeper of the Prairie Winds Prairie. What's new on your prairie, Mike?
Well, this morning it was a little bit difficult to see through the fog, but it's a golden prairie this time of year. So that along with dew-covered dragonflies are what I saw today.
Uh-huh. And there's some golden shades of autumn coming to the Prairie Awakening. Now, this is an event that we've talked about in previous years. It's down in the Dallas County Conservation Area, hosted by Chris Adkins. And it is tomorrow, September 11th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. The telephone number to include more information will be on the website, but it's 515-202-2552. And in quoting Chris, we may be abbreviated this year, but we will still bring the healing of the native drum, song, dance, and stories to the Prairie Awakening Awoke Arena for the participants, and that's at the Keene Conservation Area in the Dallas County Conservation Board website.
And once you're awake, Sunday the 12th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., the Iowa Audubon, Iowa City Bird Club, and the United States Army Corps of Engineers is sponsoring a Pelican Festival, and that's at the Hawkeye Wildlife Area. It's located at 2564 Amana Road Southwest. That's in Swisher. And for contact information, they leave a phone number at 319-330-7013.
List that one more time, please.
Yes, 319-330-7013 for further information on the Pelican Festival at the Hawkeye Wildlife Area.
That's at Coralville Reservoir, just up this river from Iowa City. The weather looks delightful again today with a beautiful high of 84 with low humidity. It was 52 during the dark hours of the night coming into the station, so really cool this morning. The forecast is for 94 tomorrow, Saturday, with highs in the high 70s and 80s next week. Looking like summertime conditions will prevail. Now let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so diligently at gathering the news for this week from the pages of our local newspaper.
There was plenty of news in this past week's Ames Tribune. Let's start where we usually do, with last Friday's paper, which reported that 157 new cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County during the previous week. That brought the total number of virus cases in the county to 11,512 since the pandemic started. There was also word that about 53% of Story County residents were fully vaccinated against the virus. Meanwhile, the Ames School District reported that as of last Thursday, fewer than 16 cases of the virus had been reported among students in the district schools. In the Ballard School District, fewer than 21 coronavirus cases had been reported. In Gilbert, 7 cases were reported. And at Iowa State University, 8 cases of the virus were reported. There was also word that the state of Iowa would start updating its online coronavirus dashboard 3 times a week. That change came as coronavirus cases in Iowa continued to rise, and as Governor Kim Reynolds told a news conference, in her words, COVID isn't going away. She urged Iowans to get vaccinated. About 4 out of 5 state residents who are hospitalized for the virus have not been vaccinated, and 9 out of 10 residents who are in intensive care units because of the virus have not been vaccinated. The Trib also reported that a Boone man accused of leaving notes saying, "Burn that gay flag," taped to residents' doors this past summer, would stand trial next month. 25-year-old Robert Clark Geddes is charged with 5 counts of trespass with intent to commit a hate crime. His trial will begin October 5th in the Boone County Courthouse. All of the doors that had notes taped to them had flags or doormats supporting LGBTQ people, and the notes spoke in opposition of that support. The Trib also had word that a Roland man had donated $80,000 to renovate the basketball and tennis court in Roland's City Park. Gary Thompson has a long history with Roland and the state of Iowa. At Iowa State University decades ago, he became the first Cyclone to score more than 1,000 career points. He was named an All-American by the Associated Press, and his number 20 jersey was retired by Iowa State. He was chosen in the fifth round of the NBA draft by the Minneapolis Lakers, and then became a TV college basketball commentator for more than 30 years. Saturday's paper had plenty of preview stories about that day's upcoming season-opening football game between Iowa State University and the University of Northern Iowa at Jack Trice Stadium in Ames. One of those stories was about what Hy-Vee was going to do, offering a free coronavirus vaccination clinic before the game. Vaccinations were not required to attend the game, but the clinic at the south side of Stevens Auditorium would be offering people a chance to protect themselves against the virus. No appointments were needed for the pop-up clinic, and people could choose to get any one of the three types of vaccines that are being offered around the nation. The Trib also had a story about Nick Bassett of rural Boone. He's 29 years old, and he's been a season ticket holder for ISU football for 9 years. But this season means more to him than ever, because this past spring he had to have both of his legs amputated because infections had set in. He made a vow to attend every home game at the stadium this year because, as he put it, football provides an escape. And ISU coach Matt Campbell is in Bassett's corner. Campbell gave Bassett a black ISU jersey with Bassett's last name on it and a signed football with a special inscription on it. And the Trib reported that applications are now open for grants of up to $15,000 for facade improvements for downtown Ames businesses. And businesses and their owners may be eligible for property tax abatements on the value of new improvements. Applications are due by October 1st. Sunday's paper reported that the city of Ames had released its guide to growth over the next 2 decades. It's called the Ames 2040 Plan, and it's designed to guide the city's growth through the year 2040, when it's projected that 15,000 more people could come to live here. The public will get its say about the plan at a Zoom meeting on September 22nd or at an open house on the 27th. The plan focuses on 6 elements: growth and land use, mobility, environment, parks and open space, neighborhoods and housing, and community character. The Trib also reported that the controversial Black Lives Matter at School Week of Action that the Ames School District held last February continues to have ramifications for the district. The Iowa Department of Education has asked for documentation around complaints that it received, and the department is tying that to a process known as a targeted accreditation review. State officials will be in the district, likely at the end of this month, to interview members of the community along with district staff and students. The district has been told to anticipate some kind of result in early November. The outcome of such a review could include technical assistance and support provided to the district, or possibly the issuance of citations and a required action plan. And the Trib's website had word about Iowa State University's first football game of the season, which took place Saturday at Jack Trice Stadium. The Cyclones defeated the University of Northern Iowa 16-10. Up next for Iowa State, a home game tomorrow against the University of Iowa, which defeated Indiana 34-6. Tuesday's paper reported that 2 anchors of the federal government's coronavirus protection package were ending, or already had ended. As of Monday, nearly 9 million people lost all unemployment benefits, and a federal eviction moratorium already had expired. President Biden and Democrats who control Congress are letting the aid expire as they focus instead on a $3.5 trillion plan of safety net programs. The Trib also had word on a new treatment available this year at Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames. It's called hyperbaric oxygen therapy. It involves a glass chamber that allows someone inside to breathe pure oxygen in a pressurized environment. Air pressure is increased 2 to 3 times higher than normal air pressure. Under those conditions, someone's lungs can gather more oxygen than would be available breathing oxygen at normal air pressure. And when blood carries this extra oxygen throughout your body, it helps fight bacteria and stimulate the release of substances that promote healing. The Trib also reported that downtown Ames would gain a splash of color on September 26th as local art organizations host a chalk art contest in which participants can win prizes. The contest is sponsored by the Public Art Commission, the Octagon Center for the Arts, and the Ames Community Arts Council. Artists are invited to compete on the 400 block of North Burnett Avenue, just north of Tom Evans Park. A 4-foot by 4-foot square will serve as a canvas for each artist taking part. And there was also word that for the second time in 3 years, ESPN's Game Day pregame football preview show will be staged here in Ames tomorrow, before the Iowa State University-University of Iowa football game here in town. The main stage for the show will be between the End Zone Club and Ryman Gardens at Jack Trice Stadium. The show will kick off at 8 a.m. The game itself will start at 3:30 in the afternoon. Wednesday's paper reported that the Ames Police Department had published an activity report that includes information on arrests, citations, use of force incidents, and traffic accidents for the month of July. The department intends to share a monthly activity report about 2 weeks after the start of each month. Among the things the report reveals, black people in Ames are overrepresented in arrests and charges. A total of 83 people were arrested or charged with an offense by Ames police in July. 62 were white, 18 were black, 1 was Asian, 1 was American Indian Alaska Native, and 1 person's racial identity was unknown. That means nearly 22% of those arrested or charged by Ames police in July were black, while just a bit more than 4% of the city's population is black. The report also showed that in 2 of the 3 use of force incidents reported in July, police used force on individuals experiencing a mental health crisis. And the report showed that all employees of the Ames PD received diversity, equity, and inclusion training in July. And the Trib had word that Ames's no-charge yard waste days have been set, giving people 4 chances to dispose their yard waste at no cost. The dates are October 30th, November 13th, the 20th, and the 27th. Waste can be dropped off at 400 Friel Drive in Ames. Each year, the city offers no-charge yard waste once in the spring and 4 times in the fall. Yesterday's paper reported that 2 people died in a crash on Interstate 35 south of Ames on Monday. It took place when a semi heading southbound failed to stop for slowing traffic and ran into a pickup truck. The driver of the pickup, 81-year-old Gordon Martins, and his 79-year-old wife, Nora, both of Van Meter, died in the crash. The Trib also reported that a former Ames police officer who led the Iowa State Patrol on a high-speed chase last March had been sentenced. 40-year-old Jason Eaton received a 5-year suspended sentence and was ordered to serve 7 days in jail. He was also fined $2,500, ordered to complete a course on drinking and driving, had his driver's license suspended, and was put on probation for a term between 2 and 5 years. He had pleaded guilty last July to eluding and operating while being intoxicated. Earlier, he had been fired from the Ames PD. There was also word that Iowa State University held its annual Club Fest on Wednesday, a chance for students to visit other students at booths to learn more about the organizations on campus. Students said there was more interest in the first hour of the event this past Wednesday than there was in all of last year's coronavirus-affected event. And the Trib reported that Maximum Ames will hold 2 nights of live music at 3 venues tonight and tomorrow in conjunction with Ames Pride's Pride Around Town event. Those music events will take place at various times at the London Underground, the Angry Irishman, and the Alluvial Brewing Company. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, happy as always to be with you, and happy as always to have the weekend coming right up. I'll pay a return visit to this very same virtual seat on Monday morning at 7, when I'll have news about what's been going on in Iowa. And that might very well include word on a certain college football game taking place tomorrow here in Ames. I hope you have a great weekend.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News and the music interlude, Imagine, John Lennon. Maximum Ames kicks off this evening. Let's welcome Fred Love and learn just a little bit more. Hi, Fred.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Dennis Hart covered your event pretty well, but give us a contact, where to get started, and thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. We're so excited to finally have some live events after a year off. And so if anyone wants to see the full lineup, I think we've got 11 acts over two nights at three venues, two of which are on Main Street in Ames, one of which is Alluvial Brewing Company just outside of Ames. We're not charging a cover this year, so they're all free. And so you can go to the Maxim Ames Facebook page if you want to see the whole lineup for Friday and Saturday, two nights of live music. And
okay, great.
We're asking people to wear masks and distance if possible.
Please wear your mask for Maximum Ames tonight and tomorrow night. Thank you, Fred. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Well, Ursula Rudenberg, station manager, is here. We have the insights of people that were in New York City and experiencing the tragic day of September 11th, 2001. Hi, Ursula.
Hi, Pat.
Great to have you with us here in the heartland.
Thank you. It's nice to be here on a Friday morning.
Yeah, great to hear your voice. We're going to have a pretty in-depth interview with Jeannie Hopper, someone that you were familiar with in New York City. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of get this going, what's the 20 years meant to you since 9/11?
I don't know. Yeah, as somebody who was there when it happened, literally right there in front of the building, and who experienced the aftermath in the weeks to come, really that month afterwards. You know, when you experience a tragedy like that so intimately, it becomes a part of you, and there's a certain tenderness in you that develops towards that memory and the feeling of what everybody was going through collectively at the time. And so every year on September 11th, I go back to that.
Mm-hmm. And your work was involved in Manhattan. You were there.
Yeah, I was at the time working Greenwich Village, a few blocks north of the World Trade Center. So it was right in our neighborhood when it happened. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. This turning point, if you will, mm-hmm. and now the 20th, if you could, as we listen to Ms. Hopper, Jeannie Hopper, who is from New York City also. I'm just wondering how this is all going to play out maybe 20 years from now.
I don't know, I'm hoping for 20 years from now, we as a human race will have moved on so far that we don't need to look back on this so much. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to think that this doesn't have to remain such a defining moment for this country.
Mm-hmm. We're going to hear an interview from a woman who experienced 9/11, and we'd like to play that now.
This is Jeannie Hopper of Liquid Sound Lounge, a long-running music and culture show out of New York for 28 years and running, originating on WBAI and now continuing virtually. We'll just put it that way. Do a search. And also I am the audio producer for The Laura Flanders Show, heard here on KHOI. So I've been asked to talk about my experience with September 11th. Just a little background. I've been in New York since 1987 when I arrived for college. My work involved almost immediately volunteering at WBAI. And I got very much so into doing a lot of political reporting in Central America and the Far East. And later, it rolled into music, but that's a story for another time. And I give that background because it has significance in my experience on September 11th. If you are engaged in the kind of independent reporting and covering of perspectives from an international perspective with regard to, let's just put it, the world order and interests of the United States globally, especially in business, in the business of oil, and et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to get into too much of that, but you should be aware of that being a factor. So September 11th. Going to my music, I was at the time, I think I was just about to launch into having a moment that put me on the international scope as a DJ touring, which was a weird time to tour. Yeah, actually, I had that just before September 11th. It was in March. So fast forward to September 11th, I was already, I had a residency in London monthly, and that was a jump-off point to flying to a lot of different places to DJ around Europe and even the Middle East and the Far East. So on September 11th, I had been in Montreal, Canada. I had had a gig the night before. I was there for about 3 days because I had grown to know the community there and was a regular DJ coming up there from New York. And that morning was interesting. I did not turn on a radio or a TV, which was usually my go-to in the morning, especially traveling. Instead, it was waking up late and then having that frenzy of, oh my God, I'm going to miss the airport. I'm going to miss my flight, shoving everything into my luggage. The promoter rolling up too, very tired as well. He hadn't had his radio on in the car or anything either. We're racing, speeding to the airport. And I'm going, I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss this flight. I mean, literally, I had 30 minutes to go and get on the flight. So I already kind of was prepared for dealing with the joy of having to change a flight last minute. We get up to the airport. I came in, and I'm like, oh, wow, there's no line. Now, mind you, this was probably about 9:30-ish. My timeline is a little fuzzy. And I said to the check-in person, yeah, I'm headed to New York. Here's my information. And he said, your flight is canceled. And I said, oh, it just figures. You know, you get in that mode at the airport. And mind you, I was very jacked up because I was late. And, you know, you're in that frenzy. I hate traveling like that. Usually I'm one of those people that has an hour or two in advance that I love to go slow. And he says, and I said, okay, so we're going to have to change the flight. And he goes, all the flights are canceled. And I went, what? And then he said, the borders are closed. All flights are grounded in the United States. And I said, what? He goes, apparently, they think there's something going on with terrorism in New York City and the Twin Towers. He proceeded to point to a TV monitor further back, kind of in a waiting area, and I just froze in my tracks and saw what was going on. But my political side kicked in. Before looking at that monitor, I was like, you know, it just figures. The United States, you know, it's finally come home on our own soil. Something that if you covered politics around the world, it was a weird thing that the United States always seems separated from the actual boots on the ground dealing with war. Whereas other countries where we're involved, it's very much in the population's face and dealing with so much. So then I turned around to that monitor and I saw that. And then I started to realize that there were TV crews in the airport and they were trying to get sound bites from people. So that was pretty fast considering it was only now about 9:45. So he says, well, go wait in that line and figure out what to do. They're helping. So I went to that line. I got on the phone with some of the folks I knew that were involved in the event I'd done the night before. And around that time I was on the phone, my friend was streaming a radio station in New York, WBLS, which is a great black-owned and operated, fabulous music station. Very locally engaged. And just when he started to explain to me, he goes, Jeannie, it's really bad. It's bad. Listen. And he held the phone up to the live stream. Just at that moment, it was when the first tower went down. And
It's funny. I can't believe I'm getting choked up now, even 20 years later. It's something I don't like to talk about. You can imagine the amount of thoughts racing through my head. And it's something that I think we forget about. The very personal impact of that day for each individual and what that meant versus the, you know, flow of information from commercial media. You know, finding this weird, anyways, I don't even want to get into it. But it was that moment almost like COVID where you wanted to be close with your community. You were concerned with those most immediate to you. So back in New York, having my radio show, doing lots of events, doing boat parties at that point, which was significant. It started a trend with other people with as the waterways opened up in 1999 for more possibilities to do these events. I realized back then it was about mailing lists, snail mail. You know, I started thinking about all the people that I knew had addresses that they'd given to me in the World Trade Center to mail them postcards and announcements.
You've been listening to Jeannie Hopper from her experiences of 9/11 in New York City. There'll be more of her report. Let's take a little music break, and then we'll be right back with more Jeannie Hopper.
No matter how I try, I just can't shake these blues. No matter how I try, I just can't shake these blues. Like a big black crow, they're flying after me. They're trying to shake me right out of my tree. They shake me through and through, but I just don't shake these blues. Don't shake these blues. It seems so hard, there's nothing left to fight it. It seems so easy to just let go. It seems so dumb to get so excited. This might be the last I told you so. It's like a cautious crapshoot, I can't win no game. But the dice ain't nice and they never remember my name. You can shake them up and shoot them, you just might win. Take your money home and never shoot again. I shake till I lose, but I just can't shake these blues. I can't shake these of shadow with nobody taking me home. You know the dark is a demon, it swallows me whole. The fear is the shadow that shades my soul. Till I shake in my shoes, but I just can't shake these blues. I can't shake these blues.
This is KHOY Community Radio, Local Talk, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum, today with our engineer Mike Murphy and co-host Mike Metz. And we have been listening to a 20th anniversary of 9/11, a recording made yesterday with Jeannie Hopper, who was working in New York City that fateful day. And before the break, Jeannie was relating about all her addresses of people she knew in the World Trade Center building. Let's pick up her story where she left off.
And then I started to realize Windows on the World is a very special place where this DJ Lucian, we called him the loungecore DJ. It was a time when lounge music suddenly became a thing. It was a trend from England, you know, very, how should I say, oh, it'll come to me, the kind of music it was, but a lot of remixes and fun stuff. And it was an opportunity for people that were kind of funky, groovy, artsy folks would mingle on the top of the World Trade Center with the financial district set. But it was the music that glued us all together, because you would look at each other like, well, what do we have in common? But it was that music and the dancing. So immediately I started to think about, oh my God, is Lucien up there? The staff up there, the crew up there. And I also knew that there were some artists in residence programs in the towers. So that's where my mind went. And then I was picked up by the promoters and brought to one of their houses. And I literally just sat there numb for 4, 5, 6 hours. Finally, they pried me away from watching what was going on the news coverage. And it took a lot of work to get back to New York. Luckily, I was on the second train back to New York, because there was no airport action going on at all for a while. The first train, the stories were that people sat at the border for up to 12 to 15 hours. They were basically freezing things to make sure that whoever was coming and going was well checked out, because they still had no idea who had done this, or at least we didn't know yet, you know, the picture put together of what actually did ensue and where this attack came from. And so the ride back to New York on the second train, because I was able to actually exchange my plane ticket for an Amtrak ticket, it's about a 13-hour ride. It was the quietest, and I had been on this train before. It was the quietest ride I have ever been on, with New Yorkers especially. I mean, just dead silent, because we all knew that we were heading into, you know, directly the reality of what was going on. And just to close the story out, it's really the story of after the attacks that was tremendous. The amount of people that rushed in to, with the hopes of finding people in the rubble that were still alive. St. Vincent Hospital became kind of like a hub in the West Village. People started putting up, you know, Xeroxed pictures of loved ones, trying to find them. Around that hospital especially, there became this huge wall that people put pictures up and were looking and looking. There was a little like ceramic workshop storefront that turned into people being able to come in and make a tile in commemoration, just to you know, express yourself. So people made up these unique tiles. They hung them on this metal fence that was across from the hospital. It was really kind of a corner construction site. So the whole thing ended up covered. The smell is the big thing I will never forget. That smell blanketed New York, because I was in Chelsea, which is, you know, about, on a good day, a 10-minute ride on the subway, probably about a 15-minute bike ride on a good day, too, down the west side along the Hudson. It's beautiful. And we sat and we watched that smoke. It was called the pile. And it just smoldered and smoldered and smoldered, like a volcano almost. And that lasted, because I was flying still out every month from Newark Airport, right across the Hudson, right across almost where the Twin Towers were. So it was this constant, eerie, taking flight and seeing this. I had a boat party that was about to happen 2 weeks after September 11th, a dance party, get my fans together from the radio show and from the club scene. I wanted to cancel it, and everybody was like, no, no, we need this, we need this. At the same time, several clubs had done these kind of emergency, quick, thrown together parties. And I remember the one at Central Fly DJing and this intensity of people being together and wanting to be together and just kind of mourning, but almost in a New Orleans style, like trying to celebrate and send off those lives that were taken in vain. And it was intense. So the boat party, we did it. But the boat goes down, you know, around the Statue of Liberty, around, you know, all those islands, the place, Ellis Island, where so many had come through in their journey to New York in the prior, you know, century. And I have to say, it was the same energy and people feeling good to be with each other, to be in like company and support. And we stopped by the World Trade Center, by the pile at this point. And we had a very long couple minutes of silence. And that was intense. Thinking about those couple minutes, it felt like an eternity. And all I could think about was the eternity that it must have felt like for those folks that were trapped up in the tower, and the firemen and the policemen. And my neighbor upstairs is a fireman. So those are other stories to be told, how that just ravished, in more ways than one, the fire department and the police department. So now I was hoping, we all hope, that peace would come of this and there wouldn't be reactionary, you know, more war, more destruction, you know, against the destruction that happened. It's almost like two wrongs don't make a right. Call me a hippie, call me kumbaya, but peace is a beautiful thing. And I'm sorry that for 20 years, the heavy hand of violence that extended from that day, you know, it still saddens me. I'm glad that there's a shift, but now I worry also for the Afghan people. I worry, but at the same time, you know, music is a great solace. And on that day, it was an even bigger reminder. I'll leave you with the song that maybe you want to bring up and add to this. Dub Tribe Sound System put out this song called Do It Now. And that, in essence, became the soundtrack and still reminds me of that day, as music is a mile marker in our lives. So I leave you with that to listen to Dub Tribe Sound System. It's on YouTube. Do It Now. Sit back. It's a very long piece. Make sure you find the original. I think it's like 10 or 12 minutes long. And it's just grounding and beautiful.
Dub Tribe Sound, Do It Now. That was the reverberation that our guest Jeannie Hopper just related. That tune will be on the website, access to it. But obviously it was, I think, somewhat of her meditative story, the compelling story that she just related of what it meant to be in the community of Lower Manhattan on 9/11. And Mike Murphy, our engineer here at KHOI, I understand you have links to Manhattan Island also.
I used to work not too far from the World Trade Center, and I've certainly been up in that building a couple times. And the one thing just to relay from that experience, like, it's great to have this huge panoramic view, but the thing that really struck me is, like, looking from the top of one tower to the top of the other, and this bottomless pit in between you. That was, you know, that's what really resonated with me more than anything else, being up there.
A chasm,
right,
if you
exactly,
will.
Exactly. That's the perfect word. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's something I remember. I did relay when we were here all together Tuesday about my memory with my nephew. Another thing to share, I have a friend who's a New York City fireman, and his firehouse, the World Trade Center, was in that district. And he was off that day, but his firehouse, there was another fire shortly before that, so they got called off to something else. So it was his comrades were spared because they were off covering another fire, and another neighboring firehouse had to go cover that, and that's what happened. And so my friend, who, by the way, received an award from Rudy Giuliani back in 93 when there was an attempt at exploding the World Trade Center, he saved someone's life then. The thing he relayed most was the duties that they had after that, which was basically sifting through debris and you know, finding, you know, unsavory things, let's say, amidst all the ash and rubble. And, you know, you might find a shoe, or maybe that shoe wasn't empty, let's say. And it was a grueling experience that all these guys have to live with forever.
Have you maintained the link with your the man who was the fireman in this follow-up? Gosh, one thing Jeannie Hopper kind of mentioned was the smoldering pile, equated it to a volcano. All that smoke for that duration. How is his health holding up? Or have you maintained ties with
him? I have. And he's the kind of person that doesn't really speak too much about his health concerns. I know he did have some issues, but I can't even say for sure that it was related to that particular event. You know, that was an issue that the EPA, I mean, this is the area of Manhattan where Wall Street is. The EPA gave the all clear, everything's okay to go back to work. And of course, that was a bit too soon. It's kind of prescient of what we're going through today, of public health versus the economy kind of thing, that same kind of pressures, oh, it's not that bad, we can open up kind of thing. Well, it's going to stay with him forever, as to some extent with all of us.
And I know one of the remarks that was very poignant from our station manager, Ursula Rudenberg, of the immediacy of the declaring war,
right,
open armament against our enemies, when they felt they were still in the grieving
right
process. And I think recently I understand there was one of the member in the House of Representatives that voted against us going to war.
That would be Barbara Lee.
Barbara Lee.
Yeah.
What a compelling story that she was pointing out in my research, that you shouldn't make snap decisions like going to war
right
during a time of grief and,
right,
and mourning, and how that affected the overall spirit of the times.
Absolutely.
Well, it's something that we will all carry with us, and it does make me wonder how we'll acknowledge this at the 30-year and then at the 40-year, or
right,
how it's going to keep being revisited. But thank you so much. And that was Jeannie Hopper that gave that account. Thank you, Ursula Rudenberg. And thank you, Mike Murphy,
sure,
for your thoughts at this time.
You know the dark is a demon, it swallows me whole. The fear is the shadow that shades my soul. Till I shake in my shoes, but I just can't shake these blues. I can't shake these blues. I shiver and shake my life away. I've been sick in my time, this ain't nothing new. It's just worse than the first time, and it lasts just as long as I do. Well, I went to my doctor, such a waste of time. He gave me a bottle full of dope of some kind. He said, shake before you use, but it just don't shake my blues. It don't shake my blues. It seems so hard, there's nothing left to fight. It seems so easy to just let go. It seems so dumb to get so excited. This might be the last I told you.
So let's welcome Mary Rankin, Sustainability Coordinator with the City of Ames and Iowa State University, and Susan Gwiazda. Maybe first, Susan, do you have updates for us?
I have a couple of updates. Just a few things to think about. Next Monday, September 13th, there will be a Parks and Recreation Capital Improvement Plan review. So that will be on Zoom, and there's information on our website on how to participate in that Zoom meeting. If you're not able to make the meeting and you have some ideas on ways to improve parklands in Ames, some of those ideas would be we're looking at a bridge at Moore Memorial. We're looking at some playground upgrades, lots of really nice quality of life kinds of upgrades. If you're interested, but you can't make the meeting, go on our website and find the email for our Parks and Recreation Director, Keith Abraham. He's a frequent guest on this show, and he would be happy just to take your comment via email.
Great. Get a hold of Keith Abraham. And, words to live by right there.
Yeah. And then just our regular updates. Just remember, we're starting to get those phone calls about no charge yard waste days. Those are scheduled for the last weekend in October and 3 weekends in November. And so save your leaves and information, the time, 8 to 4, that information is also on our website. We know that people are starting to do that yard work. It's nice out now. But go ahead and just save that material, and then you can drop it off at no charge at 400 Friel Drive on those weekends.
Oh, great. Great things to look forward to in October and November. I hope the autumn stays as nice as this late summer weather has been. How are you, Mary Rankin?
Been beautiful.
Yeah.
Pat, I'm doing very well. It's a gorgeous morning.
I'm hoping that some of our listeners will be composting those leaves, especially oak leaves, or know somebody who is.
Well, absolutely. We certainly encourage folks to consider those materials, whether they are from your yard, whether they are from your home, whether they maybe are from your meals or maybe your tailgates. There's a big game coming up this weekend. We really consider and ask folks to make that consideration of how that material that they're thinking about putting into their garbage or thinking about, gosh, there's nothing we can do with this, how to ensure that gets into a beneficial stream, such as yard waste days, such as just taking a bucket to your tailgating activities this weekend. And then on your way home from the game, dropping off that food waste into our no-charge 24-hour, 7-day-a-week drop-off opportunity for food waste at the Resource Recovery Center.
That was one of the most positive messages from this year's Earth Day appreciation, was all the work that's going into separating our food stuff from our other throwaway items.
Absolutely. That is such an important facet that has really given a lot of impact to the Resource Recovery Center in terms of ensuring the most beneficial materials to that system make it into the system and aren't instead potentially contaminated by food waste. And also just, it's very important for us as a community that the material that we do put into our garbage, that the fewest amount of that as possible goes to the landfill and instead goes to beneficial use. Of course, last month we talked about Rummage Rampage, another great opportunity to consider waste items that we consider we don't need anymore, but yet can have such beneficial waste. And then our food waste, we are coming up on tailgating season. We're coming up on a lot of celebratory gatherings. The holidays are not that far away. And so we just encourage folks to consider ways to leave less of an impact on our planet, as, of course, we are celebrating with each other.
Yeah.
If I could add about the food waste, Mary alluded to the fact that we've been doing it for a while and just how it's evolved, because that program started out looking a little bit differently. We weren't quite sure if it would take off and if people would participate. And we have really, really evolved the program to make it so easy for people to dispose of their food waste just by bringing it to Resource Recovery in just any bucket and dumping it. So there was a much more elaborate system before where you would purchase a punch card and you had to go to Resource Recovery during business hours. And we've been able to shed all of that and just simply offer the facility to dump your food waste. And we are now averaging 3,100 pounds of food waste each month diverted from the landfill. And that number is growing. And so I hope that more people will take advantage of this opportunity. If you put the glass back, to the yellow glass recycling bins located all over the volume you would have in your garbage.
Yeah, your message there is make sure you separate the glass and the food. They don't burn. So those things in our recycling center, where there's a lot of BTUs generated from our castaway things, except for the food and the glass, I guess. Sorry about that weak Zoom connection there, Susan, but I think that was the point you were making.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Mary, I've always admired an individual that knows how to take a program and grow with it. Are there other aspects, like Susan was saying, that kind of started off cautiously, slowly, and then have really become the keystones of your sustainability program here in Ames?
Well, first of all, I have to say nothing has been done by one individual singly. It's been a team effort completely and all the way. So I give so much credit to all of the many collaborators across the community and certainly including the university. And so, you know, and it's interesting because I think there are a number of initiatives. Sustainability, as we all know, is a journey. It has milestones along the way, but it's an ongoing journey. And it's a journey that changes. You know, there are new pathways that we discover every day related to new ideas, new action items, different technologies that become available. And I really give the city and the university a lot of credit from the standpoint that we do go in a methodical manner, I think, in looking for options. And we do a lot of piloting to see if this is a good fit. And then we evaluate and we make adjustments. As Susan mentioned, perfect example is the Food Waste Diversion Program. And I think Rummage Rampage is another big community event that we have seen just grow and expand over the years. And this finished our fifth annual event this year. And with each year, it has been an absolute community collaborative effort and feedback loop into seeing how effective the event has been, and to look at different ideas and different ways to incorporate new options to make it more successful. And so, for example, Rummage Rampage, you know, a couple of things that we did. One thing is we found that as a lot of folks were cleaning out items they felt they no longer needed, there was a lot of value in these items, in them being family heirlooms or antiques, and people just saying, gosh, we really didn't need these items. We really want to get them to someone that can appreciate them. But in the midst of all of the sofas and all of the, you know, $1 office chairs or lamps and those sorts of things, we found there wasn't really necessarily that recognition and that appreciation of some of these items. And so that caused us to create a new area on our sales floor called Rare and Unique Finds. And Councilperson Gloria Betcher has really been spearheading, looking up information about all these unique items and promoting them. That has brought out a whole different means of consideration of how to get items that still have a lot of good use and good, you know, consideration and opportunity into those homes and to those individuals that will really appreciate them. And that has also caused a lot of additional proceeds to come into the event that then we share with nonprofit organizations. And of course, each year we see more and more material come in, more and more material homes, more and more volunteers coming out with a diversity of new organizations being represented. And then, of course, the proceeds that we're able to put back to our community nonprofits who volunteer continue to grow.
And I think it was upwards of $40,000 that was divided among 28 or 29 nonprofits here at Ames. Well, this has been very informative once again on the second Friday of each month that we welcome Mary Rankin, and things to think about, look forward to. If you have special items for next year's Rummage Rampage, it'll be coming again in July. And it's not that you're going to be, it's, things are going to go away. They just might be repurposed by some other young family that can use your stuff.
That's exactly right, Pat. A good reminder, as we continue to consider items we no longer need, no matter what they may be, just another little thought, another little consideration as to how they may have a beneficial use year-round. And certainly for the big game tomorrow, think about collecting your food waste, collecting your recyclables, bringing your reusable dishes, and leaving that much less of an impact on our community while we celebrate a great cyclone win, I have no doubt.
Okay. Okay, with those choice words, thank you, Mary Rankin, Sustainability Coordinator with the City of Ames. And thank you, Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Pat. You too. And always sustainability information on cityofames.org.
cityofames.org. Thank you, Susan and Mary. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at 89.1 FM. Tell your friends far and wide. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find that yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Runenberg and Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy, and thanks to our guests Ursula Runenberg, Jeannie Hopper, Mary Rankin, Susan Guiasta, and thank you, Mike Metz. I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard were Eileen Jewell, Can't Shake These Blues, John Lennon, Imagine, and Do It Now by Dub Tribe Sound. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.